one, side two. So were some of your relatives working with you at the steel mill then?
Oh, at the
casting company.
Yeah, at the steel mill, Grand City Steel. I had a brother-in-law, but he was a helper only, like I was. Here I had nobody. None of my relatives worked there. And I started out in the press room. There's a press room for me because I was familiar with presses coming from that school. Then they decided they're growing and they had the press room for me in charge of press production and the setups. And the setup is a job by itself with 400 different types of dies, and you're responsible for all hundreds of presses in the whole plant. They're supposed to do their own work, but whenever they have a problem, then you decide which, how it's going to be done. Mm-hmm. And if you have to go to engineering for information, that's fine. That's your business. But it's your responsibility to get it done. And to go in there with no experience, mm-hmm. in a plant that had 3,000 employees at one time.
Yeah.
And to have the boss knowing that you didn't have any training in that field and ask for you, that he wants you, specifically you.
That's what happened to you in the service.
Yeah.
When you became the supply depot manager.
The captain wanted me.
Mm-hmm.
Took me out of B battery. And I said, "Why do you want to punish me?" He said, "I have somebody that I have faith in and I think will do it."
I'm sitting here thinking about all of the things that you've done, and I'm thinking about a boy in Mrs. Prater's woodworking class. And I was thinking that downstairs when you were showing me your shelves that you built and your hanging things that you built.
Yeah.
Where, have you always been crafty, or do you think some of that encouragement came from home?
Well, no. It's the Hungarian people. Because of their closeness with the money, they do all the work themselves they can do. You know, whether it's electrical work, whether it's cement work, whether it's carpenter work. And if they can't do it themselves, they have a friend that can. And you'll help that friend when he has cement work to do or brickwork.
Mm-hmm.
Not like Mr. Boyd, he was a bricklayer at America Steel. My mother decided she's going to fix her basement up. Had the furnace room partitioned, the fruit cellar, we kept her canned goods and her sacks of flour and sugar, whatever, and a kitchen area where she could, they call it the family room now. So she got old man Bart over there. These are used bricks that we bought them for a penny a piece off the brickyard, used.
When was that about?
And built a wall across the basement. And the door for the furnace room and the partition for her canned goods and other flour, sacks of flour and sugar. And plastered both sides, and the wall when we painted looked like that.
Hmm.
See, the used bricks you can't tell once you put plaster on them.
Yeah.
You know, and paint it. And she painted the floor. And my father installed a sink down there. And she made a second kitchen down there.
Hmm.
They had a laundry room down there, food cellar down there, a furnace, all partitioned up.
Now, you know, when I looked at Magyarhaz, I saw they had like a separate entrance to the basement. I guess that was a common thing to have a lower level and an upper level.
Yeah, well, see, the upper level was the stage and the ballroom.
Oh.
There's a ballroom in there. They had dances there all the time. And the bottom level is divided, and they have a club room in the back entrance, where they had a bar and four or five tables on it, and people came there to play cards and drink beer. And the big cellar, that was partitioned up. Now, when you rented that for the wedding, you had a wedding, you'd rent the hall and you'd rent the big basement, because the big basement had a full kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Sinks, ovens, counters, refrigerators, everything. You could bring all your they buy the chickens alive, and the women would get together and dress them and clean them and put them on. They didn't have that mummy freezer compartment, so they get buy brand new wash tubs, galvanized tubs, and buy hunks of ice and ice this overnight. Because see, you can't clean those chickens, fresh chickens from the farm, and dissect them up into sections and go ahead and fry them all in one day.
Yeah.
So the 10, 15 women get together, and boy, I mean, they clean 100 chickens like nobody's business. And they put them on, and some people have wooden barrels that they use for food when they butcher it and all that. They burn them, you know, they put them in ice overnight, on ice. They wouldn't spoil overnight. And then they come the next day early in the morning, and they begin to fry that chicken. And they put it in ovens, the ovens they got to keep it warm. And when you come that evening, you have a sit-down dinner with slaw, potato salad, fried chicken, soup, baked pork loins.
Mm.
I mean, you have a big spread, see, and all kinds. And people would bring pastries and cakes, your friends, and others would bake cookies. Oh, we had a meal when we had one of the weddings.
Tell me about your wedding.
Oh, my God.
And your reception. Who was in your wedding?
She had 5 bridesmaids, and I had my cousin for my best man because I was his best man, and his wife was a maid of honor. And we rented the Hungarian home, and all my mother's friends came there and cooked Hungarian goulash and potato salad and roast pork and roast beef and you just name it, you know, ham. And they buy rolls of this white paper and covered those picnic tables, and they'd have a big serving table, and you go through there and help yourself.
Mm.
There would be all the meats, the chickens, and the salads, and you just go through there like a smorgasbord.
Mm.
Or you could have a meal out of this world. I mean, all home cooked.
And then, what did you have for music?
I had a gypsy orchestra.
Gypsy orchestra?
Violins, and there's a table with strings on it. You beat it like a xylophone.
Mm.
And they have a saxophone or a trumpet also.
And did you do any kind of traditional dancing?
They dance a chardash, they dance a polka, they dance a waltz. And because there's young people there, the orchestra plays jitterbug once in a while, you know. They make everybody happy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was. And then the tables are set. All your mother's friends and their daughters, they come and they set the table in the afternoon, and that evening they help serve. They actually bring the table, you sit down and bring the plate to you.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, they bring a plate to you. Of course, they put the slaw, potato salad on the table if you want extra. And they put extra pieces of chicken also, mm-hmm. even though they bring you the plate individually. But everything is free
mm-hmm.
to help. But you'll do that for the next person and the next person, you know.
Did you have a wedding cake?
Oh, beautiful one.
Mm. Was it made at the local bakery or someone made the cake?
No, we had it made at the bakery, regular Busy Bee Bakery. I don't know, 4 tiers high.
Mm.
You know, with the bride and groom on them.
On top. Did you do the thing like we do at weddings where the bride and groom have the first dance and then
yeah, and then everybody puts a dollar in the bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, 500 some odd dollars in a half an hour. The wife danced a half an hour and she waved me and I was sitting on the side because the groom dances last. That's the end of the bridal dance.
Oh.
That signals, he went to claim his bride.
That's very symbolic and romantic.
Yeah, and I went out there and threw my dollar bill on the bowl, and I took a couple of steps, and everybody starts clapping, you know. And naturally, they want you to see you kiss the bride.
Yeah.
You dance 3-4 steps, and you give her a peck, you know. You can't make a mushy kiss in public. Save that for tonight. She was a beautiful bride. You can see her picture?
I'll take a look at that.
She was a beautiful bride. There was 5 gals in that family. All 5 got married. All 5 had nice homes. one on Terrace Lane, one behind the park. Only the one in Ohio, her home is framed, but it's comparable to this. The only one is Madison Helen. She lived on Greenwood in an ordinary house, but she had a hard-headed husband, Polish husband, and she didn't fight him. And I don't have a sister-in-law that I don't like.
That's wonderful.
And they don't like me. I can go to anyone in their houses, and the first thing they say, I think there's some beer in the box, or are you hungry? You know, but that's family. See?
Mm-hmm.
I was good to their sister.
Mm-hmm.
I gave her a nice home. They don't realize that while I was giving her a nice home, she was giving me a nice home too.
Yeah,
you know, about keeping it clean, cooking good meals. She sewed my bed. She sewed these curtains. She sewed her own clothes.
And I spoke with your son on the phone. Do you have any other children?
Mm-hmm.
One son.
Dr. Tote.
Dr. Tote.
He's got a PhD in St. Lucia.
And where is he? He's in Grand City.
No, he's over there with his mom.
And where is that?
You could talk to him.
Oh, no, that's okay. I already, he gave me some things. That's
mm-hmm.
okay.
Yeah,
I just was thinking, you know, I just wondered if you had a daughter.
No, no daughter. That's what the wife really wanted. She had a hard time becoming pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
She took treatments from Dr. Friedman for 4 years. One day I got a call at work from the nurse, or his nurse, and says, Mr. Tootin, I said, yes. And I worked in the Time City office at that time, before I went down to be a foreman. He says, the doctor would like to see you. I said, well, anytime he's available, just give me an appointment. I don't want to come up there and sit in the hallway for an hour or two.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, well, let me look at his schedule. So she came back in a few minutes and she said, which date would be a better date? She had a couple of dates. And I said, why don't you make it such and such? I don't quite remember, except I knew it was in the afternoon. See?
Mm-hmm.
And she says, fine. So I went up there. She says, now when you come up, don't come into the waiting room. Come to the back door and knock, and I'll hear it and I'll see that from her office, patients can't see that.
Mm-hmm.
So I knocked and she came by the way. And she says, he's tied up with a patient right now. I put this chair out there in the hall for you to have some place to sit. She says, I'll call you. And sure enough, I waited about 10, 15 minutes, but she called me in through the back door ahead of all the customers in the front. And he says, he knew me by that time because I've talked to him before. And he had charts made up. And he says, I think we lucked out. And he put these slides in that machine, what you call it, that shows it on the wall, you know. He says, and he's pointing at certain circles in the ovaries, you know. And he said, now this is an indication that there's live cells here. And he said, look to me, that's your spot, you know. I wouldn't be sending her for a year and a half to see him to spend all that money if I didn't want a family.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I think you're going to be a daddy.
Isn't that great?
And he says, now we're going to have to be awful careful with her.
Mm-hmm.
We can't take any chances. He says, if I tell you to take her to the hospital, I want you to take her right now, not tomorrow. He said, I'm going to be awful careful with her because I want you to be a daddy. And he says, you want to be, don't you? And I said, sure I do. I wouldn't be sending her to her, taking her to St. Louis, the specialist and all that, you know. And sure enough, everything was working pretty good. And it got to the point where she was getting bigger, bigger, bigger. Look, everybody in the neighborhood knows she's pregnant. Going down the street, her tummy would come around the corner first. I can't complain. I don't know how one father that wasn't very smart, had a very poor job, had five daughters, and five daughters have good husbands, good homes,
mm-hmm.
and take care of themselves like women should take care of themselves. When you see them someplace, the very need, their makeup is on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, when they're home, they got a cotton dress on and no makeup, you know, you're
mm-hmm.
good. But you expect that from a woman that's cooking a meal for her husband. She's not going to be in her high heels and, you know.
June Cleaver.
Yeah. But I just hit it lucky. I had 5 girls and all got nice homes and good husbands.
And you got the best one.
Well, each brother-in-law thinks that. But I thought I had a very intelligent woman. In fact, with a GED only, had 8 graduation, and my boy was working on his master's then. He said to her one day, he said, "Mom, will somebody write as well as you do, and spells as well as you do, why don't you sign up at SIU and take that course for retired seniors that didn't have the opportunity to go to high school?" She said, "Do they have that? What does it cost?" He said, "It don't cost almost nothing." He said, "I'll pay for it," meaning him. I said, "You don't have to pay for it. It's only going to cost maybe $50 for the most." Mm-hmm. "And we're going to handle that. My God, I'm a foreman."
Mm-hmm.
And I've been a foreman for years. So she went up there, and she went through that with flying colors. Of course, she was a good speller, a good reader.
Mm-hmm.
My boy says, "I can't figure it out." He says, "I'm working on my PhD, and she outspells me." And you know, you don't get to be a PhD at St. Louis U.
Yeah, that's true.
Or Washington U. Washington U is even tougher.
Mm-hmm. You know, women are a lot of things, aren't they? And they don't, even without education, they know amazing amounts of things from being around the home and running and organizing homes and...
Learn to sew, learn to cook, learn to... She'd been gone for months. This house don't look that bad.
This house looks wonderful.
Yeah. Any woman would be glad to come in here and put her own touches onto it, you know, naturally. Every woman has her own touches. And for me to think that I drew the plans myself.
Amazing.
On a piece of paper. I was in a type sitting and the drafting room was next door. I went in there and said, "Hey, give me some drafting paper." "What do you want with it?" "You don't have a drafting board in industrial engineering." I said, "I'm going to take it home. I got a drafting board at home." He said, "What are you going to do?" I said, "I'm going to draw a house plan." So I went home and I set it up in the basement so I could go down there when I want to. And there was a small, dinky old basement, you know. It was a duplex. Only had half the basement of the wall between them. And I drew my plan and took them into work. I run extra copies through there. Very good engineering department machine that's made for that.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I hire electrician, I didn't hire my cousin's electrician and I helped him. The bricklayer I hired, but I just give him a plan. There's a plan on how this house should look when it's done. And yeah, fine. Joe Rill did the brickwork. And I forgot the guy lived on the grand over there, I can't think of his name. He was just going into business as a plasterer. He was working for other companies and finally went in business for himself. And he did a job for a friend of mine, and oh, he did beautiful work.
Mm.
The house was on the corner there, the empty lot on the grand, and then that nice brick house there. The people who built it had the same name as I had, Toked, but not related.
Mm.
The daughter lives on the big house I showed you in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. Pershing built that for himself, twice the owner. That's a 5-room house, and looks like outside looks like it'd be a 6 or 7-room house. But you should see them rooms in there, like everyone, like my living room.
Mm-hmm.
Big, you know. And they go to our church, and I thought, man, I really lucked out. I really lucked out.
You've really achieved the American dream.
Well, I was ambitious,
mm-hmm.
and I was, I don't say I was intelligent.
But I
had a certain degree of ability to see the final picture.
Mm-hmm.
I saw this house in my mind when I put it on paper. I do this with my own hands.
Yeah. It takes vision and clarity to do that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And people come in here and say, "You bought these plans? Who from?" I said, "I didn't buy no plans. I looked at one to Famous and Barnes Stixon, and they got book after book of pictures of a house and a floor plan. I said, every one I looked at, my wife would find fault with. The kitchen's too small, the kitchen's too big, I don't like the dining room where it's at. Look at that bedroom, I would rather have this there instead of that third bedroom. And you know, whatever's in her mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally said to myself, why don't I just draw the plans? I can get all the drawing paper I want from engineering. They're next door to Time City office. I went in there and got some paper, and I had a drawing board at home. I put it on there, and every night I'd make some lines. When I finished, got one, I took it back in there and run copies of it through the print machine, run prints, regular prints.
Mm-hmm.
When the contractors come out here, and I give them a print, where'd you get these printers? Hell, I made them myself.
That's wonderful.
I worked in industrial engineering at that time, and I know the engineers next door had asked them had a printing machine. Once you got that brown line, we call it, you put the brown line in there, and just like you do on a Xerox machine, you put your copy in there, press the button, and feed the paper in, and out it comes. There's not a mistake on it. But, you know, I had the means. Being in position, the job I had,
mm-hmm.
I went downstairs, I was general foreman down there when I quit. Had 60 women work for me. Nobody could handle 60 mm-hmm. women if they weren't your aunts.
That's true.
You can't do it. Not even this guy. Because you... They came out there and says, well, you weren't gone 1 week. They had 3 foremen in there. And I says, I knew the day I walked out the door they're going to get 3. He said, how'd you do it? I said, I didn't. I says, all them foreign women in there were my aunts and uncles, the men.
Mm-hmm.
I said, superintendent came down and told the car loaders one time, that car's going someplace else. I don't want a full load. I want, here's a wrote on a piece of paper, Unibus, Alec Bus. He's superintendent. He come laughing, you know. And I said, oh, I'll take care of that. Don't worry about it. I went out there and said, from now on, when he comes out, he's superintendent. He's my boss, your boss, and everybody else's boss in all these departments on this side of the railroad tracks. He is, I said, yeah, that's Mr. Big Shot. He said, we didn't know that. He said, our contract spells out you take orders from one boss. I said, yeah, that's meaning that other boss from that department or that department come over you and tell you what to do. You work for one boss. But that doesn't mean you don't work for the plant manager or the superintendent. You know,
yeah.
Oh, that was a good company to work for. I'd never had that mill. It wouldn't have been. By that time, my ex-plant manager was a vice president at the mill.
Mm-hmm.
He got let out over there. He went over there and he made Jim or something. And it wasn't no time for that. He was a vice president. Mm-hmm. Of course, I think he had connections up in Milwaukee, the way he came from. I got a job just like that when I walked through the door because of him.
Mm-hmm.
When I put reference, put his name down, and he was already a VP over there.
Yeah.
You know, that person I met, I saw his name, how you know him? I said, he's my plant manager over there at Mexico. Oh, you know it well then. How do you think I got that job at Hill Smith?
Mm-hmm.
The mill.
Mm-hmm.
I came there to ask for the price of steel. And discuss what types of steel, what grades of steel they would need, what gauges of steel they would need. And during the conversation, hey, you got a young man you laid off, you're not going to call back in a hurry, no seniority? Yeah, I got a good one. I stayed there. It's only 2.5 years. I didn't even know how I stayed, 30 years, but I was the oldest man they had. And they could tell me what they want. They get $32,000 check handed to you when you're walking out that door and told that you have hospitalization for yourself and your whole family till you're 65, till you're on Medicare. And there's a hunk of money for you and a full pension on top of that.
That's wonderful.
What can you ask?
That's true.
I've been out there since 1953 and I'm still drawing a pension. And if I live to be 100 years old, Abel Smith's big enough with all the 14 or 15 plants.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to close them all at one time. And to have people like Herzig, a union president, to make a statement that this company's stupid, they don't know what they're doing. I said, they didn't get 12 or 14 plants because they didn't know what to do.
That's true.
All over the country. They didn't become multimillionaires because great-grandfather had the vision.
Yeah.
He started with 13 employees making bicycles.
Amazing.
Making bicycles. The 13 employees. And got plants who make furnaces, hot water heater, car frames for every car, foreign and domestic, hot water heaters in different locations, different branches.
Thank you so much for sharing your story.
I love talking to you. You're such an easy person to talk to.
Oh, thanks.
So easy.
Is it okay if I have questions when I go to type everything up and make my projects? Can I come back? Can I talk to you or call you?
No,
okay.
If you're busy, give me a ring.
Okay.
Sometimes I'm not in because I'll go to the store, and maybe some afternoons, you know, I could, this time I may run over to Hardee's just to be with the guys, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say if you would call me in the morning before 10, and after 6:30, 7 o'clock in the evening, then you would be sure of getting me.
Okay.
Because it's rare that I, sometimes on Tuesdays at 8 o'clock they have a council meeting. Sometimes I go to the council meeting.
Okay.
Just to see what the city is doing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.